That's the word from that point, from that side.
Oh.
Well, the evil eye, when someone didn't feel good, or like if I were talking to you and then I didn't feel good after, right after that, I'd think you overlooked me. And that was what they called malukyo, evil eye. So then you'd go to somebody who knew how to do it. Malukyo, to overcome it, there's a prayer. They make the sign of the cross three times over the forehead. If the person saying this prayer yawns a lot, then you have been overlooked. Now you don't have to go in person. You can send a hairpin, a handkerchief, something that you had on at that time. You know? So they would, like if you send your child to my house, you didn't have to come in person either. You send your child over with a handkerchief, a hairpin, a hairnet, or a blouse, we say, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I would, you know, make cross some three times on that. The three times went for the Holy Trinity. And it's in as much as a superstition, it's a prayer. And you only can learn that prayer on Christmas Eve. And anybody that knows it will not tell you any other time but Christmas Eve. Although I've heard sayings of people that you can do it Easter and Christmas time, but most of the people always said it was Christmas Eve. And they make the evil eye, and then if you yawn a lot, they go, oh my God, are you overlooked, you know, like that. Yeah. And then evidently people felt better.
Yeah.
If it was psychologically, I don't know, but anyway, people felt better. Another way of doing that was the same, with prayers, same thing. Well, you got a basin of water, and you threw a little oil in there. Now, these oils would separate, these little spots of oil, you know, like you read now in the environment, you know, spread. Mm-hmm.
What kind of oil?
Cooking oil. We used olive oil in our days, or it could be cottonseed oil. You know, if you were that poor, you didn't use too much olive oil, you know, as cheap as it was then. And if the oil spots would spread, you were overlooked. Now you have to throw that water away at La Crucivilla, crossroads, at an intersection. It's Crucivilla in Italian. You cannot throw it and right go out of here and throw it in the street. It has to be a cross light. And any intersection is a crossroad, isn't it?
Why is that? Why?
Well, I don't know, just superstitious or some of the things of believing. I couldn't tell you why. You never threw it away. And if you did throw it away that way, it had to be done all over again because you wouldn't feel good. You know? I mean, then there was the children who had worms. And you would cut, get water, say some prayers, and you didn't know what was bothering the little tummy. And you cut little strings in there. And if them, you know, did like worms that squirm around, then the child had worms. And boy, not believe it, if you give them something for worms, and it would be cured, you know?
What would you give them?
Well, I don't know what they'd give them, you know. For worms, you'd give them something for the stomach and rub the little tummy with olive oil, or give it some castoria or castor oil, you know, give it a laxative. You'd give it something that was cooled into the stomach, you know, nothing with acids like orange or lemon that we do nowadays. A little milk, you know, and things like that, and let it move its bowel, move, get them out of there. Mm-hmm. Then we had other cures. We had Malfa tea. We used to call Amalfa in dialect. You got to remember, a lot of us spoke different dialects. From here to the next corner, as it was in Italy, with different cities had different dialect, different towns rather, not cities. But we understood each other here in America because one overlapped the other after, you know. But in Italy, you could go from one town to the other and you wouldn't understand it. There was about 100 and some dialects in Italy. We'd wash, pick it up in the fall, wash it up and hang it behind the stove to dry up. And then put it in a bag, tie it up and keep it. And in the winter, when anybody had a cold, you boiled some of them.
What was it?
Malfa tea.
What does it look like?
Big plants like that. You can buy them in drugstores now, Malfa tea, but only the leaves, you know? That there sometimes, to make it stronger, concentrate, you'd make a syrup out of it. Now you would put wine in it, Malpati, wine, prunes, apples, and let all these fruit juices concentrate into a syrup. And you would give it like every 2 hours, every 3 hours. Malpati would also, in case of a stomach ache, you would give it. It would soothe the stomach, like you take tea when you feel a little bit better. Then we're and there was different herbs, you know, we'd pick. Like we had these big leaves that you don't want on the lawn. Sometimes you put those on boils. Evidently our diet was unbalanced, and children had a lot of boils. And I laugh at it all now. You go in with a little boil and they squeeze it in the hospital, and anybody comes and sees, got to put on 3 coats to say hello, how are you, in the hall, you know. And we went to school with these here, you know. Boiled. I'm serious. I'm not trying to make it up for you, you know.
And you treat all those at home?
Boiled?
Yeah.
Well, for God's sake, you take them, if you didn't like it or not, your mother's squeezing. Sometimes it wouldn't. You put warm stuff on it, so it would come to a head, and then they would squeeze it, and then put a patch on it, that's all. And we didn't have no adhesive tape. We were too poor. You get the bandage, and at the end, you rip it off, make a knot, and then you could tie it, you know. Like you learn most of these things in first aid. Or soap, octagon soap, with honey, warm honey, sugar. Well, people had in fact, we have a girlfriend of ours right now that, you know, we told her she's crazy, but in those days it worked for her. She's afraid because she's accident prone, she falls quite a bit. I said girlfriend, a lady friend our age, you know, I'm 69, you know, and she didn't go to the hospital. She fell down, must have broken her arm. So she had a woman make a cast for her. And there was women who were very good at this. They knew how to rub. Sometimes they rubbed and caused you another fracture, but you know. But they knew how to rub. Rub was an art. If you didn't feel good or anything in pain, they knew how to rub. And some could feel muscles. Today you have massage parlors for that. But they'd get the white of the egg, sugar, and I don't know what else they put in. Anyway, they batter it up and then wet your gauze, and they put it on there, or it wasn't gauze. You take old sheets and rip them. And that would form a cast hard, and you carry your arm like that. Well, sometimes it would heal wrong. My wife had it once. It healed wrong, so they rebroke it in the hospital after and set it. You know? But most of the times it worked, because they knew. If people were too poor to go to doctors, and doctors weren't hard to get, but they didn't bother with that. You couldn't go to hospital. In fact, where the shopping center is now, on Mohawk and South, was the Oneida County General Hospital. And before that, it was Utica City General. One of the best hospitals around, and it was for poor people. And many hundreds and thousands of babies were born in there at first. Because babies were first born in the house. And automatically the midwife became a godmother as a matter of respect that she brought it out of you into the world.
Yes. Did you know any midwives?
Yeah, Mrs. Coop, and she lived right around the corner from me. She's dead.
Yeah.
I knew several. One on Albany Street, and I don't remember her name, but she died, Laura something. Laura Catalano was another one on Elizabeth Street. And everybody... My brothers and sisters were born from midwives, you know.
And they were born right here in Utica?
In Utica. I was born in Italy.
You were born in Italy?
I come when I was almost 4 years old.
At what point did midwives stop being called on and people started going to the hospital?
30s.
Was there any reason for that? Any reason for 30, the change?
40. Yeah, more doctors came out. I remember the time, I don't mean to be offensive because you're late, they seen a little bump on you and I was your husband. Doctor, you know, it's a contrast to today, see. The doctor would approach me, hey, your wife's pregnant, call me, I'll do it for $30, $25. Now it's $500, they break it between the hospital and nurse, about $1,500, and you're lucky if the doctor's there when she gives birth. He takes it and gets the pain.
You're absolutely right.
You know, like I have my you're Betty.
Yes, sure.
If she had 2 children, the doctor on the second child, Mary Michael, he was in New York. They went down with a friend of mine, emigrated to eat, and they missed a circle in the Garden Park, State Park there, and they kept going around and around, and she had the baby, and he wasn't in Utica yet. And that doesn't discount on your bill, and he's the doctor. And the little Judy, she didn't have him, but Michael and Mary Jo the same way. Both times he missed out. You know, now when you go to a doctor, they show you pictures of how you're supposed to diet and all that. I'm not saying it's wrong. And then it winds up showing you how you can borrow money with a book at the bank and pay every month, you know, which is the principal thing. And in those days, they used to approach you, where now they tend to take two aspirins. I can remember Dr. Mascara, who's now working part-time, he's an anesthesiologist. He was so good to the poor, he couldn't afford, he had no gas and electric at home or in his office, because he wouldn't take any money during that depression. And he told me, you take aspirins. And I was so worried about it, and he said, about something, I don't want to take up your time. And he said, take one every 3 hours. I couldn't lose no work. I was on WPA, that was the Works Progress Administration. And he said, take one every 3 hours. I said, hey, the heart. Two, I rather. I said, the heart. He said, heart? The only thing they hurt is the druggist's pocket. But I give you a prescription, he'll charge you $2 for about 8 of them. He said, you got any money on you? Go to Howard Johnson. That's where Dawes was, on the corner of Genesee and Bleecker. He said, they got a sale, 100 for 7 cents. And don't let nobody tell you they're cheap. And another cure was two aspirins later on in years when these younger Italians became doctors. Lemonade with a shot and then go to bed and have your wife or your mother wake you up every 10 minutes because you'd be sweating, you had to change off. And wear long underwear, them long johns. That's even a cure. I tell everybody how to cure their colds now. And this is the doctor's prescription. Getting back to the old remedies, besides mouth fatigue, we had a lot many, we used to carry garlic sewed up in jeans. The classroom, the teacher would suffer. And every week, about 25 or 30, had a piece of garlic sewed up in the bag. Mm-hmm. And I used to be a BB, you know, and every time the teacher would open the window, go, hey, my father gets mad, I catch cold. And she'd have to close, and she'd be dead. She was a dead duck, you know. And we had, of course, we were very religious, and we'd have metal sewed in the little bag. And some people were very superstitious, and they'd have the janitor at the church or the custodian give them a chunk of incense and carry it in there. And then to them, that was, you know, what? Nobody could overlook you with the incense there. This was a counter-offensive towards the evil eye if you carried the incense in this little bag where all these little medals were. Huh. You know, but we also had the garlic so we wouldn't catch cold. That came out more or less after the garlic. I can remember it came out more or less after the great Spanish influenza, when people were dropping dead on the street like, you know, pears off of a tree. In fact, there used to be mass funerals, no more individual funerals at church for a while.
How would you carry the bag? Would it be on a...
Sew it on your underwear. You pinned it on your underwear. It was a little bag your mother'd sew for you out of some remnant left over, and you'd wear it over here. Of course, if a guy shot you, you'd never die. All those metals and the garlic and everything, you know.
What kind of medals would they be?
Our medal, Blessed Mother, St. Anthony, St. Joe, religious medals. Uh-huh. You know, that was a great thing. In fact, there's an old Italian, a Sicilian saying, "Divenne da De Marte non si sposa non si parte," and that was a belief for the Sicilian. On Tuesdays and Fridays, you don't wed nor you don't journey. You know, then we're 2 days. And there's some people who don't eat meat on Wednesday today with all the changes of Vatican II Earthy. Mm-hmm. Especially if you got injured or some special grace was granted to you, say, please bless the mother, say, help me with my child, help me with my daughter or something like that. I will never eat meat, you know, as meat was really a luxury to us. You know, the first chance you grabbed it, you had meat. Meat was not as plentiful as it is now, you know. We were poor. And you'd keep away from it. And to this day, some people have never ate meat on Wednesday or Fridays. Friday was a church rule, which is also you know, done away with now. And other sacrifices that they would do, these are religious practices. People laughed at it. For instance, everybody was American except us, you know. But the others would laugh at some of our beliefs or external things. For instance, never get to Italy, go to Padua. At the Basilica of St. Anthony, there's a room full of gold hearts and rings and chains and gold medal. People give them up and say, she's my wife or she's my daughter. And something happened to her. And I'm expressing, it's an expression of love. St. Anthony, please, this is all I got, this chain with this medal, solid gold and earrings. I will give them up, I'll offer them up to you to the place I give them to do what they please to help others or what, you know, spare my daughter, or do this for her, or let her that, or let her husband change, maybe it's brutal, or make her son, my grandson, be good for the sake of my daughter and all that. And you pray with arms up, up in arms, prayers with up in arms, and say, I will offer it. Now, this is all you got. You don't have 10 more rings in a safe deposit box. So it's an expression of sacrifice. And many favors were granted, whether you want to laugh at us or not, or one of the things people, you know, could always afford the stipend of a mass. You know, they offer to have a mass. Are you Catholics?
No.
No. Well, see, you wouldn't understand all this. Now, I can afford a stipend of a mass, but I have a priest have a mass said for $5, you know. But I would choose to ask Blessed Mother, St. Anthony, St. Jude, or somebody, please grant me this favor. I will go out begging for a mass. Now, $5 would be hardly anything to anybody today. But I would go house to house and meet my friends and say, look, I'm begging for a mass. Would you give me a quarter? And I would do it, instead of a dollar, I'd only want a quarter. Because I want to humiliate myself as an expression, a sacrifice, making for the favor that I'm requesting, asking, and to be granted to me. You see, this was an expression of faith, and a sacrifice added to an expression of faith. This was a lot in my heydays, you know. And there was people, you would go there, that, you know, like I told you, for rub downs when you were sick, and they'd rub you and everything, you know. Many people continued working because you didn't take the day off. Like I said, I don't feel good, I ain't going in today. Especially when you were working 7 days a week washing dishes from 7 at night to 7 in the morning and came home with about 2.5. You didn't take no nights off. Pains weren't there, you know. You just, I don't mean a washing machine, you walked, you know, in restaurants that were pretty busy downtown, you just bit your lips. The next day you went to somebody. Now there was a high degree of respect for godmothers and godfathers, never mind the books they write or anything. I think Mario Puzo in the Unfortunate Pilgrim, he wrote a book before The Godfather. He did a very great disservice, and a lot of truth in it, but it's a disservice to Italian, because he could have. He doesn't write without sex in it, and filthy sex, you know. But he could have put everything that's in the book without writing about, you know, filth. But the things were true, and in fact, I'm so sorry, it's only a paperback, and I can't find it. I'm supposed to have it, and I can't find it. But it's. If somebody baptized your child, the godmother, at baptism you have a godmother and a godfather. At confirmation you have either a godmother for a girl or a godfather for the men. When the Italians first come over here, and the so-called Irish or American had one godmother for all the girls and one godfather for all the boys, this was alarming and scandalous to them. Because to us Italians, you had a high degree of respect and responsibility.
You must choose the godparents very carefully.
Yeah, then. Very, very carefully. And besides, the godfather or the godmother took the responsibility that if you died or were unworthy of the child, they would see that it grew up in the faith. Or you would take over. Many of godmothers and godfathers grew children up when the mother or father or both died. Or nurse them.
That was their responsibility.
Their responsibility to nurse them. There was nothing for next door neighbor, whether you were godmother or not, to nurse you if your mother wasn't making milk easy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if these are the things you'd like to know.
Sure.
You know, sometimes they had trouble getting milk in their boobs, you know. Mm-hmm. But nursing was the main thing, you know, not bottled babies. First of all, bottled babies that says they're like cows. That's why the Americans don't like nobody, and then they treat us. Now we add superstition and a little hatred to it, you know, because they got them like, they raise their babies like animals with the bottle and the cow. Our children ain't cows, they're our children. We'll feed them with this. And this was being proud. And in fact, I understand from younger girls, because like you interview me, a lot of people like me because I'm an older man, tell me that this is coming back. They're nursed, more
yes.
Breast nursing. Mm-hmm. Around than there was in, say, 10 years ago.
Yes.
And it was a very important thing. Of course, nowadays they hide them. You know, when I did, we see everybody with their breast out nursing babies. We thought nothing of it. You know, we're running around trying to play. You know.
I wonder what kind of things did women do if they weren't making a lot of milk. Were there things that they could do or eat?
Well, sometimes you had to go. Sometimes, you know, and the prescribing thing was a problem too. Sometimes you would help me nurse my baby. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you would give it at the minimum that you could from a bottle. And sometimes the doctor would order goat milk. Now, those days there was a lot of goats around. Everybody had a goat in the backyard, you know? You know? And unless somebody says sheep, that became a little problem. Then you have to go out on the farm and get somebody who had a sheep. But goat was no problem. The city was full of goats. Mm-hmm.
But was there anything that women could do to increase their milk?
Yes, then somebody came out. Well, one thing, you may laugh at this, but I did it when Betty and a couple other were partially breastfed, mm-hmm. you know. And, of course, this became an expense. You got to figure we were working for nothing. But for 5 cents, you get, you see these big railroad pails, got a cup on top, and they carry their lunches in these big pails. Mm-hmm. For about 5 cents, you could get that full of beer those days. Mm-hmm. Beer made milk.
So if the mother drank beer, then she would make more milk.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, no drunk.
Right.
And of course, she would probably, which she didn't, although everybody in the family had a little wine at your meals, we always had wine.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
No matter how poor we are. It's why you never seen alcoholics in Italy. They don't drink sweet wines and everything. Right now, Seagram's and Ballantine is the main two things I know. I was there 59. I never seen so many Seagram signs in my life, and I was a bartender.
Oh.
You know, I never seen so many signs for Seagram's in this country, and I was a bartender. But the, like, bread, we bake our own. Our mother baked their own bread. Well, imagine being pregnant. She baked her own bread. There was no watching out for your slimness, you know. She washed clothes by hand. She boiled them in soapine. And did all the other work. And you break enough bread in one time with big loaves like that to last you the week. You bake once a week. And still they found room for time for socializing. The first bread would be a big pizza, so I would call you. Would you say your name, Carol?
Yeah.
Carol, come on over, I just baked the first one. And that would mean it was a pizza, either covered like a sausage loaf, the whole thing like that, or and stuffed with salami and stuff. Well, today people call it pepperoni, but we had salami, it was more tender and better. Some of this pepperoni, you could nail it on your shoes, you'd never wear it out for heels, you know, that I see around, you know, no taste to it. But also, the respect for neighbors, you know, love thy neighbor was around, and it wasn't a religious belief, it was a practice more than anything. If you were sick and you had 5 or 6 children, your responsibility as a mother was heavy. So you would wash all the children up in the morning, comb their hair, you know, and then clean them up and send them off to school. You give them a little cup of coffee. Some had milk, so I never drank milk till 1960. I all drank my coffee plain. And we had bread, and the bread, as I told you, we baked once a week, and sometimes about the third day it would get hard, and you'd dunk it. Mm-hmm. And that would be our soup. Today I see all these commercials, eating my cherry, you know. Their fannies are full of holes like a macaroni strainer of injections, and they're sick every time they sneeze. They got to be hospitalized. You know, I really don't know if it's really progress or not. You know,
it makes you wonder.
You know, I know they can. We live longer, but in you take some of these kids I see sick all the time. I'm very active in my parish work, and I'm very active with seniors. In fact, I just come now. I volunteer at the school, Mount Carmel School. I answer the phone for Sister Westerman. So I know everybody, and girls your age that are married or unmarried, highly respect me. Sometimes I can kiss more times, you know, walking around the streets, because your mother told you to respect me, so when you see me, you kiss me, you know. Right. And I sold newspapers at 7 and a half. It was World War I, 1917. I had like braces up to here. No route where you go throw it on a porch and you collect once a week. Paper, Mr. Paper? In fact, I bought it for a penny and sold it for two. And right now, I was fortunate, I'll show it to you, let me show it to you before I go. I showed Mr. Ward. I got a copy the other day from the year I came from Italy, 1912. They must have paid a half a cent because it only sold for a cent of the Herald Dispatch. And, you know, every other newspaper guy says, this is my coin, get out of here. Hey, who left it to you? You put them down, you fight out. And then with a bloody nose, you go, paper, mister, paper. If a guy gave you a nickel, he told you keep the change, which was 3 cents. You know, if that happened to you 10 times in a night, you went home with 30 cents. You only started with 15 or 20 to buy newspapers. So now your mother says, you, I'll kill you. If you, I find out that you did something wrong, see, they're all tips. She's afraid you might rob. And this was important, their name. It was so important. I remember one time somebody picked on me, I was a teenager. Then we had a street fight. Two detectives went by, broke it up. So one detective went to his house, another one came to my house to tell my father that we were fighting, you know, none of us got arrested. See, I got home, I says, hello, father. Hello. 40 years in this country, says nobody ever came to my house, policeman. You made a policeman come to the door. See, this was a disgrace.
When you worked like that, did your wages go to the parents?
Oh, sure, sure. Only hotels, you know. When you worked, you brought your pay home. In fact, I was reading in this book, and I think if you need information, this is a book that was used for a textbook at upper division of where I lectured. Mm-hmm. You see here, right here? All the students signed it by Professor Reese.
Uh-huh.
Now this has got everything, you know, I might do it moment and stuff. And if you can get this book, you find a lot of stuff. Now you brought the pay home and you pulled them. Have you read the paper the last two nights?
No, nothing. I haven't read the unit.
This is an interview of...
Grande.
Yes.
I don't know, it was up for property loss, and then the guy never took it out. Yeah. Yeah. Little man, big man. Yeah. Yeah, tell them to look it up, their property law, look up the file, and they'll find everything that's in there.
And part of that is, who can overlook you?
Anybody that's jealous of you, a neighbor, sister-in-law, anybody.
Well, how do they do it? I mean,
well, I don't know how you throw an evil eye, but I can say that dirty son of a gun, he's better off than me. Oh, ain't he beautiful? Or isn't she beautiful? That, all these little things, like sometimes you thought that you were overlooked because she says to me, aren't you handsome? Or you're a beautiful woman? Now I go out and say, see, I don't feel good, she overlooked me.
Is it like a headache or stomach?
Well, it mostly affects you like a headache. You know, bed, you can't move, no energy and nothing. But the head, it hurts more than anything else on that overlook.
And is anybody capable of overlooking?
Anybody can overlook him.
Intentionally?
Intentionally and, you know, unintentional, you know?
Uh-huh.
Then they had other, I don't know remedies, but they had remedies where you had to go to people who were like witchcraft, you know, and you wasn't evil eye, but you did something so that they couldn't shake off this illness or, you know, or break them. You know, it's like she loved you and I could do something to her. You know how witchcraft works, but that there was existing because I used to hear the old timers speaking about it. That one there, you got to watch out. She can put the prints on you, you know.
What kind of things would they do?
Well, I don't know what they would do. That was always a secret, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, witchcraft.
But there were people. There were people.
People that were supposed to be capable of, you know, having I could have somebody do something to her that she would be crazy about me, although she didn't love me. You understand? And other harms. You know?
Who were the people that you would go to in the community?
Well, whoever was known as a witch, you know? There was always somebody said that one there, she knows how to throw the jinx, well, keep away from her.
Or,
usually it was always a woman, you know?
Was there a name for what it was that they would do?
Well, I don't know how you even spell it. Margarilla, which means witchcraft. Margarilla, it's a dialect name, you know?
Uh-huh.
That woman knows how to do that, you know, she'll make it. And I know many things and I wouldn't say it, you know. And you go like this, make the horns. In fact, you see now it's a modern thing. A lot of girls and boys wearing a horn here.
Mm-hmm.
And a hang with two fingers like that. Or haven't you seen it?
Yes.
All right. That stems, we all had them on. That was a protection against, with them on you couldn't do nothing.
Would you have
now
to-
they come out as a luxury. And back when the baby was born, right away, that was one of the first things. That and a little medal. You bought and put it around the baby, you pinned it on her little undershirt.
Do you have any medals like that?
You know, over the years, I had a horn, you know, in a hand like that, you know. They say, when you see an undertaker, always go like that. You know? And in fact, sometimes I'd shake hands with them, I'd go, hey, buddy, you know. And then they laugh it off, you know, because some of them remember, you know, the old timer speaking of that way.
Where would you get the
horn? Don't size me up, you ain't putting me in no box, brother. Hey, you know, like that, you know.
Where would you get the horns or the hands?
Jewelers sell them. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about,
mm-hmm.
Carol. You see a lot of girls wearing, a lot of boys,
yes.
A long horn,
mm-hmm.
And two or a hand with two fingers like that. I think I got one here. But they're, you know, they're modern ones.
Is that the kind of thing you can buy for yourself?
Yeah, in a jewelry store.
Well, someone told me that it wasn't effective if you bought it for yourself. Someone had to
give it to you. See, that was some of the baloney, they stretch it there, like the infant. They say, you're never supposed to buy it for yourself.
Uh-huh.
Somebody's supposed to give it to you. Well, I bought that one for myself and put it on the tree, and I put it from Dominic to Dominic, you know. Now, can I wait for you to buy one? Them things cost a lot of money. How can I wait for you to buy one? Why should I expect you to go through that? Unless you, some people have a devotion to that. That they have received many favors or granted things from the infant afraid there. And they buy it and bring it to you. They know you love it so much and bring it. And they do it quite often in a year. Some buy four or five a year. Because them outfits cost about $25, $30. Maybe more now, hard to make, you know? And it depends on the cloth. Now you think, see, this here, cloth plenty in a yard, see it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but you do that to spread the devotion, you know.
Dominic, let me ask you about this. You know, now say that I knew that I had, that I could put the evil eye on someone, that I could overlook someone, and that say Carol had just had a baby, and she said, "Come look at my baby." But I knew that I had power to overlook it. She knew it, and I didn't want to hurt her. Didn't want to hurt the baby.
This is the paper. In fact, I just happened to see it.
What,
no, you wouldn't have, anybody has that power because it's a simple thing. I told you, you can overlook somebody by intentionally or unintentionally, you know, but if the baby cried now, she would figure that somebody maybe overlooked it. A lot of people say, "Ooh, how cute, how cute." And many times you catch a tad and say, "Never mind how cute, say God bless you."
Yes.
You know, and they'll remind you of it. Say, "Ooh, how cute, God bless you, God bless it." You know, and if you did, "Ooh, how cute," the mother say, "Never mind, say God bless it." They go like that to you know. And but if the baby cried after, you'd say, "Well, that son of an OB, she overlooked my baby." So you get somebody. If you know how to do it, you can do it yourself, mother of the child. Yeah. But then to satisfy yourself, you do it and you get her to do it.
What about though, someone that could overlook very unintentionally? I mean, they meant
well.
No,
you get a headache and you call somebody to do that. And they go like that and they say the prayer and as they say the prayer. Depending on the amount of yawning, you know, that's how much it's overlooked, you know?
Do you have someone that you go to if you're overlooked?
Well, I used to have a lot of it when I was a kid. No, I have a sister-in-law that knows how to do it, but I don't go to a prayer. I take two aspirin, you know. But these are feelings, you know, we had, you know. If you did different things, you know, you felt that you broke some law or something accidentally, religiously, that something might happen to you. You know, there were so many superstitions, you know. Like Wednesdays, a lot of people are devoted to the Blessed Mother and won't eat meat on Wednesday. In fact, some of the young girls might go out and say, "I don't like go to bed with it," but they won't eat meat on Wednesday today.
Hmm. Did you ever hear of the use of salt to carry salt in your pockets or maybe put salt in your pockets?
Well, I used to carry rock salt. But camphor, you know, they had camphor rock like that. And that was so you wouldn't catch all these viruses. Well, today we know them as viruses. Then it was different types of colds. We'd have that, the garlic, and the metals. Can you imagine a teacher in the classroom with that camphor smell, the garlic smell, and 25 children, and 25 were there, and 30 had the thing done? You know, but these were all precautions against getting the cold and disease. You go to the drugstore and buy the camphor rock, like a rock. You ever see the rock candy? People believe it's like glass, you know, like that. And you wear it, and all in bags sewed up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You wear them on here because you couldn't hang a rock, you know, like that.
Was there any way that the person that was saying the prayer for the overlook could tell whether there was a man or a woman that overlooked him?
No, just prayers and you know, it's it was sort of you just say prayers and. Many times they say, you know, they pumped they threw overlooking demon. It was sort of by a prayerful way of exorcism, but in a mild manner, not, you know, like that. And people, my mother and father and others would swear by exorcism. They seen it in their hometowns and they this and they that, you know. I don't know how to tell you, but they, you know.
Can the person who knows the prayers, can they teach it to anybody?
Anybody they want, but on that day.
But on that day,
on
if
New
I
Year's.
Wanted to learn the prayers?
Yeah. Now that's, I don't know what it is, because I always say, but at Christmas time I'm with my family, so I don't go to my sister-in-law to learn. I don't know if it's an Our Father, 3-4 Hail Marys or something like that, you know, but or it's a prayer of intercession to Almighty God to deliver the from these pains or these headaches. But I could teach it to you. I don't have to look if you're Catholic or not Catholic.
Yeah.
You know?
And what happens after they say the prayers? You yawn? Does
The person saying the prayer yawns, not the one that's overlooked. Oh. If the person saying the prayer yawns a lot, then the other person is being overlooked. Mm-hmm. First of all, you start this way. If you're in person, I do that for you. That's the prayer yawns. If I start to yawn, you're overlooked. Mm-hmm. And look, and I don't want to knock this entirely. I know it's not funny, but I believe in it because, and I don't go now, but I believe in it because I've seen it work. We were six in the family. In my days, there was no small family, too, unless a woman couldn't have children. They were all 7, 8, 9, 10, 15, you know. We were 9 million kids in one building, you know.
What's the worst thing that you've seen happen to someone that's been overlooked? Does it ever go beyond a headache?
No. You know, headache, awful pain so that you couldn't resist it. Of course, you got to tell you, doctors used to tell you not to take aspirins those days. Aspirins were out, bad for the heart. Now they don't want to come to your house because they can nab you for $25 in the office, and they tell you, take two aspirins, they don't want to bother, going to, well, especially from tonight on, he's going to Vernon Downs, crack opens.
But after they say the prayers and the headache is relieved?
Yes, it is.
Is the person who says the prayer, do they get your symptoms?
No, they don't get your symptoms, but sometimes they get tired saying, you know.
They'll get tired.
It doesn't take long either.
Yeah.
You can see a degree of exhaustion in them, you know. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of, people that have their eyebrows growing together and have piercing-looking eyes, that they have more power of the overlook than other people?
Well, that's what they used to say, but that was never a big factor in my days coming up. I come from Italy in 1912. You mind if I smoke a cigar?
No.
That was never a big factor. I made a tape for Peter Fusco on that. I don't remember a lot of things. But he got an A in Buffalo on all these cures and everything. I don't remember half of the things I'd done for him that time. His father asked me. His father owned at that time with his uncle WBBM, the Fuscos. And he says they never got it back from the university. But the professor told him it's property of the university, you know. But I always wanted a copy of it, you know.
Yeah.
But I could never get it. And some of these days I'm going to take a chance and write to the university.
Sure.
Say, in as much as I'm the man, you know, that was interviewed, I'd like to have, you know. Yeah.
You never heard, say, people with blue eyes had power of the overlook? Or more power than other people might?
The ones who could throw a witch spell on you were always women. Men were nothing but workers, you know. And in as much as a man, even in my days, in the 20s, even in much as a man with a patriarchal family, it was, the father was a boss, but the mother ruled the roost, you know. My father used to work. I go, hey, Bettina, don't remember, watch out. And my mother would go, get out of here. You know, they say the band was the boss. My mother would go, man. And my father was a short man. And my mother would say, I'll get you over here and put you down like that, you know. They kid around. And my father would say, I'll take you and I'll whirl you around like that. My mother would go, come on. Now, because she was tall, you know, and he was short. I never seen so much love in my life. But my mother was the boss of everything. My father maybe thought he was. And I tell you, my father was glad he wasn't. He was a good worker. He didn't want to manage. And he'd bring my wife to pay, my mother to pay. My mother was the manager. My mother could have been given away cheating on me, wouldn't know. He never checked her, you know.
Did your father, did you ever help take care of the children when they were small?
Yeah, I washed diapers, like I washed more diapers than if you have another seven children. Because now they have these things, what the hell are they called? Johnson & Johnson and that?
Yeah.
Pampers?
Yeah.
Sure, I washed more diapers.
The picture fell.
Oh, my grandchildren. These are my grandchildren. He played for Albany State. For instance,
who?
You grow in a family. Let me give you an instance. This, you know, you're a woman, I don't mean to embarrass. When we first got married, my wife was miscarried three times. Each time it was for, as though it was marked, 5 weeks. I was on welfare and I was getting $3.60 a week, and I had to go to the store they sent me. I don't know if this is the stuff you went.
Yeah.
And I got married in 1931. My wife's older than me, but I'm just crazy about it. So, yeah, I'm in it. So when she had married, I couldn't buy Kotex. That's how poor we were. Now, I don't mean to be fresh, I'm just giving you. Mm-hmm. So we ripped new sheets out of her hope chest and used them for Kotex. Yeah. And the only washing machine I had was these two hands and a scrub board. Yeah. And then the fourth water, you wash them, then you soak them in water, you boil them, then you put them in cold water. The fourth water was such red as the first one. I didn't know if I was getting any words or not, but I'd scrub, so you wouldn't have any. Then I'd give her medicine, sit on the side of the bed, we'd recite the rosary. I'd say half, she'd say half, we'd recite it back and forth. Never mind diapers, this is what, like my father used to take a week off, no pay them days, no sick leave you had accumulated, because there was no such progress in labor relations. And every time my mother had a baby, he'd stay home and he'd cook the broth for her, treat her like, you know, Madame Duvary, you know, that was his little honey, you know, and she just brought another life into the world for him, you know, and everything. And he'd cook and he'd wash her, which were rags, no cold. Sure. We weren't looking to spend the money, we were looking to save money. And he'd wash the sheets and everything, of course a lot of linen would be wet because of birth, you know, and everything. And this was in the house, and sometimes when it was a bad birth, the baby twisted a little or something, then the midwife would say, go out and grab a doctor, you go to the doctor's house, hoofing, you know. Not everybody had a phone those days. I remember my wife miscarried. We lost a boy that way. It was Park Ave and Catherine. That's two blocks of Black Park Ave and Bleecker. And I would run up there and I couldn't get a doctor. When I came back the third time, she was on the floor, dropped, and the baby was dropped, and I don't know what to do. I was lucky I knew enough to go to bed with him. Believe me, that's how ignorant I am. That's why I believe a little sexual education, not too much of it. Because I think it'll come along to you. Because I remember my little granddaughter saying, I can't sleep with you anymore. I'm a lady now. So, you know, it'll just accumulate. You know.
When your wife had
I think education spoiled, broke up solid families. Schools give you that false picture of how nice it is with a lawn. We never seen lawns. I only seen lawns on streets like this. You couldn't. Italians almost couldn't walk on this street. They were all, there was four or five Italians in there. They were all rich and wealthy, stinky, filthy rich. Right over there. See, those homes, they were all one-family homes up there at one time.
Yeah. When your wife had the miscarriages, was there anything that she could do to try to prevent them?
Well, we didn't know what to do. So then when we finally had Betty, we went to the doctor that we gave up the first time, and I never forget it, you know. Over there, he said, well, let us see if you spoke broken English. My son is a big lawyer, Vincent Rossi. And he said, all right, he said, you about a month, two, three, oh, 1 month? He said, yeah. I'll tell you what you do. He said, you no let him touch you no more. And you know, even the sweep of the kitchen, so I could get near my wife. Mm-hmm. I had to do everything. So when I didn't get a card to go to work, because it was depression, they'd give you cards to go to work, you know, projects, the various projects, I would wash the clothes, soak them all, wash them tonight before we'd go to bed. Then leave them soaked all night in hot water and soak again. Mm-hmm. Then get up in the morning and rinse them three or four times. And then I'd leave them near a window, so all she had to do on a box is just hang them.
Yeah.
But I did everything I could. And I thought, don't sweep the floor, don't do nothing. I didn't work every day. And when I do work, I can come home and help at night, you know. And no matter where they send me to work with a card, like up in the last street, we're up in, way past uptown, you know where that South Arterial is? Mm-hmm. That bridge, Sequoia Creek? I'd walk up there to save 7 cents and a half and then walk back after working all day.
Apparently people wanted to have families?
Oh, sure.
Wanted to have big families?
Sure, we had five or six, but then we only had three, and Rose's up in years, yeah.
Yeah. What would people do if they didn't want to have big families?
Well, I don't know what they would do, you know, because that is really confidential. Nobody used to tell you anything, but in those days, nobody talked of not having them. I never heard of not wanting any until after World War II. After World War II, because after World War II, everybody wanted babies during World War II.
Yeah.
you met him and he was going away, and you wanted to be pregnant because you had something that he'd be attached to. Because if you didn't have the baby, he might attach himself somewhere else. Maybe he did anywhere, every port he went to. He was in the Navy, but he still had the baby beside you. Then after he came home, you didn't care about having too many, you know. And then not to have babies is a long story. After he come home, you weren't satisfied. Immediately you weren't satisfied. First of all, he come home and he wanted to get unemployment insurance because he was a veteran. But after he got adjusted, so you figured, well, I don't want to rent no more. I want to own my own home. Well, you went to work and he went to work and you went to work, you know. And you said, well, later on we'll have another baby. But when you start hitting 5, 6, 7 thousand, no, I'm not speaking of today's pay, that was big money those days. Now you didn't care. You learned every scheme there was, you know. Because not only you wanted a better home, now you wanted twice as better than $150 for the drapes or $200. You know, you start piling it up. You know, woman working caused that there. Although I think woman's lib started with the Italian woman in about the 1920s. You know, that they were really making, the mothers were making the main decisions in the house. In as much as you had to have an okay. Now, if I wanted you for a sweetheart, maybe I went by and when you were on the porch, I'd wink at you, and you smile. And if you smile now, I have to send an intermediary to your house. And you'd find it in this book, but I've seen it all happen. An intermediary. Either my mother and father come, or a close friend of your family would come and say, Dominic wishes the hand of your daughter, you know. And your father said, well, I don't know. Well, we'll see. I don't know if she likes him yet, you know. He'd look for 9 million excuses first, you know, but then he'd say, well, all right, we'll think it over. Have his mother and father come over. So then my mother and father and your mother and father would come talk it over at the house. Then I could come and see you, you know, once in a while. And I couldn't take you out alone. If you and I went to show, your mother come, your sisters would come, you know. And I sat here. Your mother sat there, your sister sat there, and you sat over there. And sometimes when you visited people, it looked like the, what is it, Marcus of somebody, the ring is called, I fought, and I was an amateur fighter. You sat in that corner, I sat in this corner. You were waiting for the bell to ring, you know. I know a friend of mine that was telling Don Ward last night. His father, he went and after they call it ambashad, he would bring the message that I want your hand in a marriage and all that. And of course, then your father would ask several people who knew me about me. One of the main things was if I was a good provider. He was thinking of his daughter, you know. There was no education. Well, he says, pretty smart, but is he smart enough to be too sharp? He says, yeah, you know, doesn't know that read and write or he don't, but he works like a horse, you know. Well, that was provision, and that was good, you know. And you got to consider that was the main thing of the day. It's not today. We're talking of those days. And a lot of marriages, even maybe a match or two, panned out. That was her man. And she had 5, 6, 8 children. A couple of matches had 8 children. Mm-hmm. And they're all great boys and girls. You know, I don't know how she felt or how he felt. But usually it's a she because the man usually wants you. And if I matched, somebody will match you. Wouldn't. But that wasn't in a high degree. It was more the people loved each other, but you couldn't make personal contact.
Yeah. You're saying that the wife was the boss in the home when it came to naming the children.
Naming the children, first of all, she started taking over a little bit, famous decisions, you know, not all. And she started taking over because the man, the amount of men knew it. She was making decisions. He'd sit down and say, look, we can't make ends meet. I don't know what to do. But it was a known fact you never thought of anything else. I never think till the young people start getting spiteful. When I had married you in those days, you thought of nothing else. First, my wife wasn't speaking to my mother when Betty was born. She was in anesthesia there. She was knocked out. I'm standing there. It wasn't like now you go help your wife by rubbing her, holding her tummy and all that. I mean, it was a different ball game, you know. And I remember it was Good Friday, and the nurse says, well, what are you going to name your baby, she told me. Well, she answered, she says, Elizabeth. That's his mother. She wasn't speaking to her.
I mean, was it just a going thing? I don't know how to tell you. You knew that that was it.
That she named your first daughter after your mother?
Yeah, I'm the man. I'm going to go work. I'm going to go provide. I'm going to go I'll put up my life to protect you. I don't care how much liberated it is. Like the police, I just wrote a term paper. I don't think women should be on a police department. Then a criminal will take more chances with you than he will with me. Because you're the weaker sex. I mean, you can't have weaker sex. You want the same pay. And I agree. Give her $15,000. Give me $15,000. I don't care. And I wouldn't want you to get less than me. Because if they did, they'd lay me off and put another woman there. So it works both ways. It helps you and it helps me. Liberation, you know? Mm-hmm. Helps both. But
how about then if there was a son born, would that be named after you?
Yeah, always after the man's father first. Uh-huh. Now, the second one, usually, if they're, you know, sometimes the lady was so much in love, she said, well, name it after your mother. You're the man who said, no, we'll name your mother this time. He would, on his own accord, the second one, you know. Some wouldn't say, no, I don't even care what
your
name.
How about middle names? Where would they come from?
Well, usually, my birth certificate's got 50 names. My father called me Anthony, Dominic Anthony, Biagio, Michele, and everything, so what the hell, you know. So about this much. They gave me the middle name, but then when you got old, and you got confirmed, you took your own name. You know, in my days, then you start selecting your own godfather at confirmation. That was 11 or 12, 13 years of age. Now you pick out your own anyway. It's a thing. I like Carol, I want her to be, you know. But them days, your father and mother picked it out. But in my days, it had started to slip this in the 20s and 30s. This had started to slip, all this thing. Mm-hmm. It was more freedom, but the solid family was slipping too.
So
a lot of people, for instance, you're the baby of the family. Mm-hmm. I work and hand in my money. No open up pays, envelopes. That's a disgrace. You're not living in a hotel or a bordello. This is a home, a house, a family. He bringing his pay. The other one bringing his pay. You were a baby. You went to college. We all got peanuts. And it's a baby. Especially, sometimes the baby was named after nobody because by that time they had used up the names, you know.
So they were always named after people in the family?
Yeah, after people people and saints. No and Douglas saints. Or January, you know, Junes, mm-hmm. you know, Anthony, Cosmo, Damien, you know, Fabian, Sebastian, and so on, you know, after saints, because they lived a nice life.
Which saint to name your children after?
Well, whoever you were, was your private devotions to, whoever was your protector, whoever you favorite saint, uh-huh. you know, but you didn't need saints because you always had a father, a grandfather, grandmother, aunt, uncles. Uncles were something, cousins. Were, right now in Italy, you're not addressed as Carol. I meet you on the street, I go, hey, good gene. Kiss you, cousin. Uh-huh. And over here, the brothers are undermining to take the property away from the mother and father. I've never seen anything like it. It's almost disgraceful right now in America, in Utica. You know, go on welfare, make a note that you owe me some money this way. Son-in-laws, you know. I know a family where they took an $18,000, $22,000 home. Says that you go on welfare and they'll help you out and then you live as long as you want. 3 months later, he evicted his mother-in-law and I was on relocation for urban renewal, that's what they call it. And I got a cold water flat. You know, it's just things weren't dreamed of, that anything like that. Simple, criminal, you know, you paid dough, you know. And everybody pooled their money, you know. I don't know, if you can get Monday's paper, you know, like you see there?
Yeah.
And Tuesday's paper, uh-huh. See it?
Uh-huh. I think they have this down in Cooper's Town.
Mm-hmm. And this is Monday, see?
Yeah.
Now you can get a lot out of that.
Right.
And people pooled their money and you hand it in, they gave you a dollar or so, because that was a lot of money those days. Then all that started breaking up. Everybody wanted, you know, their own, and the parents went along with it, you know. Then they had religious celebrations where they had the processions and your favorite, you know. There was a lot of Neapolitans here, like in New York, there's a lot of Neapolitans in that section, Mulberry Street. They have San Gennaro. You probably have read it. It's one of the big feasts. They have excursions from every part of the state down there to San Gennaro's. It's in September. St. Gennaro, the Bishop of Naples, martyr and all that.
Do you have a special saint? Betty told me that her special saint was Jude, and that's why she named her daughter Jude.
Yeah, that's right. See, she named Mary Jo after his mother. Mm-hmm. Now, this is, now you're getting in a younger generation.
Yes.
And Michael after his father. Mm-hmm. And Jude, you know, after Judy after St. Jude, you know. Now, my other daughter married, named one St. Joanne. The first one, and I don't know why, because her mother's name is Angie. Then, because a boy named Joseph after her husband, but that was also her father-in-law. Her mother-in-law is Angie, and there's no Angie in the family, because the little girl was last, her name is Cynthia. In between, there's Dominic, they call him Dickie now, but it wouldn't be Dominic Timpan, it's Dominic Pavia. Mm-hmm. So they named him Dominic after me, but you know, I mean, I didn't care whether they did or not. But Dominic's even paid it away because everybody calls him Dickie, you know. But the last baby was Cynthia.
And does that have any special meaning?
Nothing to us. Cindy, you know. Then we have a daughter married to an Irish fellow named Humphrey. But years ago, this was impossible because, first of all, your mother told you not to, you know. We had just a mutual agreement, you know, mutual feeling. We thought you were lousy anyway. You're terrible. The way you did thought of me. Your mother told you not to marry me, that we ate a lot of garlic and we stink. Where do you get in bed with me? You'll never be able to stand in the bed alone, you know. If these restaurants ever have to make any money on Italians going for garlic bread, they'd starve. But you people would all go there, you know. Not us. Hell, we make it at home in the first place, you know, when we want it, when we don't want it anymore either. Because I had wore enough garlic, never mind, you know, eating too much of it. And things like we'd say, yeah, the hell do they think they are? They're no good, they're free lovers. Never be faithful to you, don't marry that one, you know? And all that there. So it was a mutual feeling. You had to retaliate some way, you just can't stand there and take it, you know. You put Christianity on one side. You know, they used to rob our pays and slap us around, you know. We pick beans, you know, nowadays the color is walking, but let me tell you, they go up in Clinton and all and pick beans, and all those rich people there babysit for them, and they have a baby center. The babies don't go in the lot no more. And they have little care centers, like, and they have little rummage sales. They give them a slip you never wore, you'll sell it for 10 cents just to show you love people, there's integration. You never did that to us. You always looked down on us as Italians.
You mean that when people work?
When we pick beans and peas, the migrant workers like doing that.
Yeah.
In fact, Hinman brought them up here and he abandoned them. That's how there's that many up here. He brought them from up south to pick beans and peas and then left them here. He abandoned them.
Right, but did the children go in to the
Yeah, we went in there. And if it wasn't for children, you couldn't make too much money. But I'm talking of infants of children.
Yes.
And we put them in a bushel basket, see? And then put a lot of vines in there, like peas picking them, when we'd get vines somewhere. And then put a diaper. Then try to find four sticks for later on when the sun comes out strong. But first you went in and you got soaked all your feet, your fanny and everything up to here with dew. And the only thing that was going to dry that dew was the sun. Mm-hmm. And you wonder why anybody at 35 or 40, those ladies had arthritis? Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, the story of Italians is sweat, blood, and tears, and it's a very sad one, but a glorious one. And we put them in the bushel basket, and as you go down the lot like this, you put the bushel basket, you take the baby with you. Now they have these baby care centers and everybody wants to show that, oh, we love them, the black is beautiful and all that, you know. They didn't do that to us. In fact, any time that we put a name in an application, I put down American on an application, and this was at Bozard many moons ago, and they told me, you're not American, the girl said, you're Italian. Mind your own business, you just handle your job, and I'm an American by choice. In fact, George Shiro wrote a book called American by Choice. He's a lawyer on the corner of Bleeker and Mohawk.
So then you're pretty much a self-made man. You started out without too much.
Well, I had to leave school when I was 14 years old. My mother swore that I was 15. So then I went to work and I brought my pay, $12.30 was my first week's pay. So she gave me 25 cents and I bought a penny of these, those, and them's and had some change left over, and all the kids in the block had candy, 5%, 4%, 6%. And then after that, I just learned a few bad habits. I met him and we went to the burlesque. They call it way up the seventh floor, quarter. So you see the girls dancing their legs and all that, and then you were broke the next day. Quarter is all you got for spending money, you know. And then you start going out and then you ask for more. And then, you know, finally they got liberated. They gave you a little more. And so when you go to show or you know, you go have a cup of coffee, coffee and, you know, they 10 cents, a cup of coffee, and